Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go.
Hi, and welcome to episode 17 of Talent Acquisition Trends and Strategy. Today, we're joined by Jim Wink. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time being here.
Yeah, we're excited to host you. And before we jump into the topics we want to discuss today, could you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I've been in talent acquisition my whole career. I started in the 80s and the 90s in temporary placement agency work. And then I got into contracting. Government contracting, supporting government integrators for the last 24 years, and basically been consulting, contracting that whole time. And just in the last 6 months, I became actually a direct employee of Okta, a company that is not in government, mostly in government contracting. It's a San Francisco-based tech firm. So I've been pretty much covered the whole, all of IT. I've done many different variations of proposal work, attempt to fill type work, any kind of I've been on large contract wins. We've had to fill X amount of hire, have had X amount of fills in 90 days, 120 days, 200, 300, 180 days, that kind of thing. The incumbents capture work, pretty much the gambit of any kind of talent acquisition within government integration.
Yeah, it's we were just talking before the show started too. I feel like we're both kind of in the DC area, both working in commercial tech, which is not not typically what I see. Most of the
right
people in this area, right, are still actively in the GovCon space. So it's cool to be able to speak with somebody in the local market that is in a similar space to what I do as well. So yeah, I'm really pumped about that. And so there's a few shared experiences, right? Both of us are in the DC area working in tech. The other thing that I know you come from a traditional agency background, contingent agency, doing temp and perm on the contingent side. I'd love to get your thoughts on how coming from an agency background has kind of shaped who you are as a recruiter and how it influences maybe, how you go about sourcing and attracting talent for Okta now. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a great point question. I mean, I definitely feel that coming from the background that I have in the agency business, I came to contracting and working directly for companies with a sense of urgency that sometimes a lot of people just don't have because they didn't come up in the business in the agency business. Whereas some people who just go directly work for a CSC or just any kind of government integrator, SAIC, they come to work, they have their job, they perform their job. Whereas when you have the background that we have, you perform or you don't keep your job. And that's a big deal if you want to keep working. So you have a sense of urgency and that permeates my everyday process. And sort of back when I was in college, I knocked on doors for a summer. And that comes from that knocking on door. I never want to go through an area and not knock on every single door. So in my situation where I do sourcing and recruiting, I always want to reach out to every candidate I feel is a match for the skill sets that I'm looking for. I never want to pass anyone by, and I always return every voicemail or email.
Well, that's how do you go about doing that? That's with candidates actively in your funnel, or what about candidates that maybe reach out to you that you didn't engage with, right? Proactively, when you were on the agency side, did you have the bandwidth to respond to everybody, even if it's people that weren't in the interview funnel? Or is it like
generally speaking, because everything I've done is always proactive. It's never really reactive. It's always proactive. So everyone I've reached out to, if they respond to me, then I always follow up. I never leave the phone. The message unresponded to. I never leave the email. I mean, I always felt that way because I always would hope that someone would respond to my email or my phone call and return. So I always felt the courtesy to, particularly like today, I don't know if we're going to get into it or not, the specifics of like the tools that we use, but LinkedIn's a very, very popular tool right now. And it's really important to me that I connect with people and I let them know that I appreciate their connection. And I have the dialogue going right there in regards to building a relationship and communicating with people. I don't feel like you can over communicate on the side of the business where I am, which is in sourcing and talent acquisition, which is in the first step between the candidate and the company. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that you can't ever communicate that enough. I don't pursue the people who have applied online and things like that, which is more reactive. I let the recruiting staff handle that because I'm in talent. I'm in sourcing, and specifically sourcing, we go after the people that are more hard to engage.
Right, right. The passive talent that's not necessarily right. applying to the for the right. jobs, right? Well, that's great. And I'm very excited to speak with somebody who's an expert in sourcing, because that is a perspective that we really haven't dialed into on the show yet. So this is going to be some really valuable content for the community. So very excited. You mentioned tools. So let's just start there. I've been looking for a way to deleverage off LinkedIn for years. I mean, the bill that we have with LinkedIn is just, it seems like quarter over quarter, it just keeps growing. I'm like, good Lord, like they're making so much money from us. But obviously it's a very valuable tool. And, I enjoy working with the team over there. It's usually a pretty good experience, but I will say that I would love to be able to deleverage. I mean, we've experimented with different job boards. We use different tools like Jim for email outreach. We've done things to try to switch it up, but I would say 85-90% of the hires we make for our clients that are all 150 startups, growth stage technology organizations, are coming through outbound sourcing efforts on LinkedIn. Are you seeing something similar, or have you all been able to deleverage off LinkedIn a little bit? Look like?
Yeah, truthfully, LinkedIn is a great tool, no doubt about it. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands or millions of people are on LinkedIn, so it's a great tool. Yes, to answer your question. Because of the nature of what I do, for the last eight previous to Okta, from 2014 to 2022, I was supporting Raytheon Technologies and the Cleared community. And the Cleared community is a very challenging community to engage because of different reasons, clearances and security. So I had to come up with ways outside of just LinkedIn. One tool that works really well, like SeekOut or HireEZ, it used to be HireTool, now HireEZ, they do a nice job of, again, there's a cost involved in that. I don't know the cost. They do a nice job of, like HireEZ does a nice job of doing a search, and it grabs people that are on LinkedIn, and it grabs people from GitHub and other sources. And it does that drip campaign we'll talk about later, and that reach out and that proactive reach out. But I have figured out a way to use the free LinkedIn tool as opposed to the LinkedIn recruiter tool to really my advantage. And just to throw out some metrics, I don't have specific numbers, but I know I get generally about a 20 to 25% return on my in-mails. For instance, when I use LinkedIn recruiter, I get 40% plus when I reach out to people on the free tool.
Whoa. Okay.
It's a much different dynamic.
Yeah. So let's dive into that, because that surprises me. That's really cool. So I want to learn more about that. And, I know, for instance, even in my team of recruiters here at Secure Vision are going to be very interested to learn about what you're doing there. And obviously the community out there and the talent acquisition community. So could you tell us a little bit about what that process looks like what drives that type of result?
Sure, I can tell you that. What I do, generally speaking, in LinkedIn, when someone uses LinkedIn Recruiter, which is no fault of anyone, I do the same thing. You'll reach out to people that fit jobs. You'll do job searches. It's very robust search. You can do a Boolean search string. You can compare recs. You can search on people who are similar to the candidates that you find that look good. So you do those searches and you reach out to people because you want to offer them an opportunity to come to work. You want to see if they're interested in if they're available. Whereas in LinkedIn, the free tool, it doesn't have as robust of a search engine, but to dig around through there, and I can't do this while we're talking now, but there is a way to dig through that site to do searches again, they don't really want you to do searches. If they heard me talking, they'd probably think you really don't want to hear them say that, but they don't want you to do that many searches because they want you to use a LinkedIn recruiter tool. But you can use LinkedIn as the free tool to do searches, not quite as robust. The Boolean string has to be much shorter, but you can go through the people, then you can go through locations, you can target candidate, target companies, and things like that, where you can get a very targeted search still, even though you're not using the LinkedIn recruiter tool. And you can, so you can do that process free. And also when you reach out, it's very limited. I think it's 180 characters, maybe it's 150 characters. So I only have time to say who I am, who I represent. I want to link in with you. I want to talk, I want to connect with you. Or if it's a second connection, if it's a number two connection, we have mutual connections. I'd love to connect with you. Those kind of things, building that, getting that first step in building a connection. And again, I don't know why, but I get about a 40% return on people who I'm just saying, hey, I'm in the industry. I want to connect with you.
Mm-hmm. And so that's, wow. Now 40%.
Then I follow up with that. I don't interrupt you, but I follow up with that because then once they connect with me, then I say, hey, thanks for the connection. I'd love to sit down with you and have a discussion about our opportunities whenever you, if you're ever interested in making a change or a change of scenery, or, and then I get that engagement. And, but they're connected with me. So they'll see all my postings, which I'm sure most companies are trying to do now. They want to post as many things as we can, you know, different things, different information about who we are, what we do. And then they'll get used to that. And then 4 months, 5 months down the road, 6 months down the road, I connect with them again because I have this whole process. Hey, we connected 6 months ago, 4 months ago. If you're ever interested, let me know. That really basic passive approach really works really well.
Yeah.
I started it in the IC, in the intelligence community.
Yeah, because I guess that was my next question. Do you feel like Okta obviously has a very good brand in tech? Most people have heard of Okta, at least have been in tech for a minute. Correct. Right. So do you feel like that helps drive some of the response rates that you're seeing?
Absolutely. Raytheon had a great name too. All the companies I supported, SAIC, Leidos, they've all had really good names. Now, what's it's really funny. A week and a half ago, I think Okta posted their quarterly earnings. And the next day, their stock jumped 16%. I got like double engagement the 3 or 4 days after that because people saw that stock jumped 16% and tech stocks doing so poorly now. We know that. But that jump, that kind of information totally will drive your engagement. If you can post stuff, get positive information about your company out there, that'll definitely drive your engagement and success.
Yeah. And I guess my next question would be, have you ever been put in LinkedIn jail? Where they don't let you send out invites.
Correct. That's happened to me a few times. I have not.
Lucky.
But yeah, exactly. But because of that, drove me to figure out a way to use the LinkedIn, the free LinkedIn account. Because yes, if you don't maintain a 13% response rate, and you know you lose your access to, or you get a warning, I think, then you lose your access to send multiple emails at once. And true, I don't want to lose LinkedIn, but I can live without if I had to. So, I mean, I'm in that position where, and I know companies are like that. Companies look at the return on investment, and it's significant, the cost involved, as you know, for the LinkedIn recruiter accounts. And there are going to be in the future need to get away from that kind of spending.
Right. I mean, so I there was a few times when I was a individual contributor where I sent connection requests to too many people I didn't know. And then basically LinkedIn made it so I had to put in somebody's email address in order to connect with them.
Right.
And there was one time, so they gave me a few warnings and then they put me in jail for like 6 months and then they let me out of jail. And then I just kept pushing it. Right. And then they put me in jail for like 3 years. They put for a long time. I thought I was never getting out. And finally,
you're really a bad dude.
Yeah, I know. Just a bad person, I guess. I was on the blacklist. No, I'm kidding. I wasn't that bad. But they eventually I reached out to their success team. And I was like, look, like I'm not spamming my network. I'll change my posting habits. I'm posting a lot of valuable content. It's getting high engagement. I really am just trying to be a value add to the community. And I had to really fight to get out of it. And so now I'm, you know, fortunately it's been good since I got out. I think I got out in early 2020 and they finally let me out. But it's that balancing act. Like, I think that's why it's the response rates on those invite requests are so important, because if they drop a little bit too low on the free LinkedIn, then, you know, LinkedIn will ultimately just,
because I was doing it pretty regularly, they will catch on if you do too much.
Right.
So I always tell people, if you're going to try that, don't reach out to more than like 100 people in a week, because that seems unnatural. If it seems natural and people are just linking in with other people, they're okay with that. But if they can tell you're using it as a recruiter tool, they'll start sending you notes saying, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that and blah, blah.
You know, right. We want you to pay, you know, 10 grand.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I've gotten around that. I haven't had that issue in several months since last year. I slowed my roll on that. I stopped reaching out to, at one point I was doing like 20, I was doing like maybe 50 a day.
Right.
I was getting so much engagement. So yeah. But yeah, if you're smart about it, you can use that free tool and use it very successfully.
Cool. Maybe we could talk a little bit about Okta's tech stack. You know, what is, for everything from sourcing to, you know, full lifecycle recruiting, like, what does the tech stack look like right now?
Well, how do you mean?
Like, what tools are you currently engaging with to source talent, to interview talent, to evaluate everything?
Right. I mean, generally speaking, I mean, like, the tools that we have a sourcing group, mm-hmm. and we have talent acquisition, we have recruiting, and we have managers of the recruiters. But generally speaking, the process is we use a LinkedIn recruiter, but we also have HireEZ, and some people have SeekOut. And in regards to engagement, I actually think that some people might have dice.com for the software engineering folks. I don't think people use like the boards like Monster or Career Builder, but in our CR, we use Greenhouse as our CRM. It's pretty mm-hmm. good. I mean, but we're getting, and that's always a tool that can be changed, right? You can always add, you can always reach out to people through that tool as well. But generally speaking, it's those are our main go-tos.
Okay. And so HireEZ, you said, basically pulls candidates from LinkedIn as well as from GitHub and different sources.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think they have dozens of sources, but those are the big ones.
Okay. And then it basically drops people into email cadences. So it's also, it has like, it's a data tool as well.
It's beautiful. Right. I mean, it's you set up a project and you do the search, and then you set up your message and your cadence, your sequencing of messages. And it allows you to set up the time that the message goes out, the day it goes out, your follow-up. And again, not talking about numbers, my response rate is much, much higher on that second, third, or fourth email than on the first one. Mm. Generally speaking, the last email that I send that I say, hey, I'm not going to bother you anymore. Obviously, you're busy. If you're interested in talking to me, let me know. People respond to that about a third to half of my responses come from that last note. I know that we need to reach out to people more than once. Mm. And that's when you get with LinkedIn Recruiter, you can reach out to people. And I think you have to wait maybe 30 days to reach out again or something. Whereas with those sequencing tools like SeekOut or HireEZ, you can reach out, set up a sequence, and it comes out like it's an email coming from your email. Okay. And it goes to their inbox. And they can respond. And what's great about that is once they respond, it drops off the sequencing. They won't get any more emails, and that kind of, and they can respond to not be emailed. But I find to have great success with that sequencing that I can send them. You know, I like to change my times that I send emails. Obviously, I change my messaging. Every message is a different message. Every message, and I like to put video links, something in that message that's interesting to the candidate, not just, hey, I want to hire you, right? And we all have training. We all know that we have to come up with creative messaging. And I won't get into that too much because I feel like I'm being pretty creative myself, but that the creative messaging is so, so terribly important.
Okay. Gotcha. I guess one follow-up question on the tech stack would just be, so what are the differences between HireEZ and SeekOut? So I thought SeekOut was similar in a sense. I thought it was
very similar.
Okay.
I know, like, for us, we were having a hard time getting the they're connected to our CRM, Hire Easy is, so I can follow track things through there. Seekout was more difficult to connect to the CRM. So it was difficult to follow our engagement and our engagement process and our engagement success.
Yeah.
We followed very easily. Hire Easy talks to our CRM very, very efficiently.
Okay.
But they are very similar. I use Seekout. I use them both. I have used Seekout. So I have used them both. Some prefer Seekout, some prefer Hire Easy. And I'm sure there's others out there that do the same type of aggregating, you know, the whole.
Do you have any data on which one is pulling in more hires or?
I don't.
At this point? Yeah.
I do not. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't have that kind of information.
No worries. Yeah. Just curious to see what you're seeing out there. But, you know, I'd love to also just get your thoughts on what you're seeing right now in the market. You know, a lot of choppiness happening in tech right now, a lot of volatility we're seeing.
There is
more layoffs, mergers. So just, can you tell me a little bit about what you're seeing from your perspective and just how it's impacting talent acquisition right now in tech? Well,
I think there's a lot of going on. And like you said, in tech space, we have a site. I don't have the actual site, unfortunately, available that I could give to you that lists the layoffs on a daily basis, like layoffs or mergers, any kind of disruption in a company's money flow, anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not swooping in, but what I'm doing is offering companies that I'm not going to list the companies, right? But the companies who have layoffs, who have mergers, who have issues, I like to talk to them. I reach out to specifically target, but reach out to those people who work in my space in those companies and say, hey, I understand something, you know, I understand you may, something may be going on there. I like to phrase it like, you know, if any, you know, I know the company's a good company. I never badmouth anyone.
Sure.
Good company in the past. But I know there may be some changes. If there's some changes you want to talk to me, let me know. And I like to talk and we can set up a time to chat. I've been targeting, I don't say aggressively targeting, but specifically targeting companies who are in the news. I mean, it's public information.
Right.
You know, they're in the news for like I said, mergers or any kind of riff, layoff and reaching out to those people. Cause a lot of those people are just caught up in numbers and they're very capable. Because they get riffed doesn't mean they're not quality.
Well, right. And you know, so some companies were even rescinding offers prior to start date. So yeah. It's like nothing to do with performance or anything. Right. It's just, you know, I guess they just aggressively overhired. Right.
So that's what I suggest for anybody who's in our industry is mm-hmm. pay attention to the layoff information and use your tool. You can target any tool. You can target companies like LinkedIn, hire any tool you have. They're all built to be able to target. Even Dice.com, you can target companies.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, it's pretty nuts right now. I mean, are you seeing higher engagement from employees at these companies or at the same time though? It's like, I feel like so many recruiters are reaching out to them that
it is. Still... And that's where your messaging has to stand out. And, and then I do I don't want to say stupid, but I do quirky things. Like I'll put, you know, a little rocket ship next to my company name. We're taking off. Right. And that little drawing catches people's attention, right?
I mean, right.
Anything that catches people's attention that might be, it might be silly, but it works. My numbers will go up when I use I use my little rocket ship, that kind of stuff in my subject line. I have to separate myself from my competitors like Ping or One Identity or Microsoft even. I mean, Microsoft does what we do. So I have to separate ourselves and that can start with my messaging.
Yeah, for sure. And without giving away your secret sauce, like what else do you have any tips for how people can go about personalizing messages or just being, is it really just less of a motion of this is how to do it? Just make sure you are different. Just try different things.
Right. Correct. Make sure you're different. You're not asking the same basic questions. I like the idea of keeping it as short as possible. And some people don't mind the lengthy message. But for me personally, I like to keep it as short as possible. I don't want people to get bored with the note. So I keep it as short as possible. And I like to have a link with a video or something. The company I support now is very creative. The company I've supported in the past, they've been relatively creative with their links. I mean, their videos. And I mean, I'm not a huge fan of sending links, but I think they can tell it's pretty secure. I mean, we're a security company, right? Security management. So I think they can trust the link that I send them, because a lot of people are a little iffy about opening links on their phone. But yeah, I'd like to send a link that says, this is who we are, or this is what we do, or this is why Okta, right? Why not? And then here's a little bit of a, and our creative teams put together really attractive videos for that purpose.
Yeah, it's I know it's obviously very competitive out there, and just because there's layoffs occurring in tech does not mean that we aren't
right
in a very competitive tech market, a hiring market right now, which we still are at this point in time. Have you seen, you know, from your perspective, do you see the market cooling off a little bit? Do you see, you know, candidate response rates rising over the past couple months? What are you seeing any trends there?
Well, I think for me, I have not seen much of a change over the last several months. I think things can change. I don't want to get into politics, but things do change around election time. People do have a tendency to potentially bat down the hatches, so to speak, because they don't know about this, you know, particularly about presidencies, when they don't know if things are going to change with their money, their taxes, and things like that. But for the last 6 months, I think the stock market has really also kind of done that same thing, where people are very weary about potentially making changes because of that. If they're not in a company that's having any issues, if their company's doing well and they're happy, they're probably not going to engage because of that specific. I mean, I think that doesn't help us, to having the stock market being so volatile over the last, since January, doesn't help our situation in engaging people. But yeah, that would be my change. I would see a drop. I think over the last month or so, for me, things have gone well because Okta's continual presence and their information they're getting out about how well the company's doing.
Sure. I mean, that's a true differentiator. If they can show consistency and growth throughout all this volatility in tech, that's definitely going to be very impressive and help. I'm curious to get your thoughts too on, you know, Okta. I believe I was listening to a podcast of, I think it was with your VP of talent acquisition. I don't know if it's the current one or somebody that was there a year or two ago. I don't know. But one of the things that they were talking about was offer acceptance rate being a primary, you know, metric that Okta was using. And the fact that your team actually has a pretty high offer acceptance rate for the size of company, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it had risen significantly over the past couple of years. I wanted to see, you know, what are the core kind of benefits or perks or things that Okta is doing to attract talent right now that allows them to be so competitive on the market. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think speaking of that, I think generally one, it's always nice to offer a competitive salary. And, you know, I mean, if X person makes 300K doing a job, he's not going to come to work, or she's not going to come to work for you for less. So you have to, I mean, have an opportunity. You have to have some reason to say, okay, well, this is who we are. This is what we do. And we can pay X, and this is what we can do down the road or whatever. I mean, so we have to be, number one, you have to be very competitive with the market. And I think generally speaking, people pretty much tell you this is what my expectation is. So I think that starts, I think we have a pretty good acceptance rate, to answer your question. We have a pretty good acceptance rate, because I think we do a good job up front. We don't get into the position where, from time to time it may happen, but we don't get into the position where we have a job that pays, you know, 100K, and we're going to be talking to someone who makes 150K. And we're going to get them through the whole process. They're going to turn down a job because it pays 100K. So we really do a good job of qualifying the candidate, making sure they're available, they're interested, the location's right, the work's right. Then we go through the processes of our interviews, our managers, the technical interviews. We do tech challenges and things like that for the technical people. And basically, I think the acceptance rate we're doing very well with that is because of that, the pre-qualifying. And I think that's super important to do that. And the money's right. And we have great perks. Okta does great with, like, they have unlimited PTO. And I'm sure that, and I've been with the company now, I mean, for 6 months, I'm sure there's a limit to that, but you have unlimited PTO. They have a super rate. I think it's a great health benefits package that I can compare to others within the industry. And I know it's because I've worked in a number of different places. It's very, very good. And that's a big help too. But generally speaking, the money they offer, the restricted stock units and how that's paid, I think all of that helps in that making that decision for the candidate when they have multiple opportunities.
Sure, sure. And from a process standpoint, how does it work? So does the sourcing team take the initial screening call and then it's handed over to the recruiting team, or is it doing the outreach and then scheduling directly with the recruiter? How does that work at Okta?
We all work a little bit differently maybe, but we definitely, my process is I will talk to the candidate first. And I will, once I do that and I'm comfortable with this candidate moving forward and the candidate is comfortable with what we're doing, then I will move them to the division recruiter. And this is their decision. They may schedule a call or they may just pass them right along to the manager and say, hey, manager, is this someone we want to talk to? So it's kind of a, once I talk to the person, it kind of is a bang, bang, bang. It'll get in through the process relatively quickly. And we try to keep that as tight as possible time-wise, because we know these people have multiple opportunities. We don't want people to hang out there waiting to hear from someone for 2 weeks.
Right. And do you have, is it like, what does the process look like in terms of communication with the recruiting team? Is it weekly meetings and syncs, or is it primarily
done through
Slack tool, or what does that look like?
We do. We, each of us have, generally speaking, have weekly, I can speak to what I do. Sure. I have weekly meetings with the recruiters, the recruiting staff, the manager of the recruiting staff I support, and that recruiter. So I'm called into their meeting. They have them anyway. And the recruiters are broken up into groups. And so the sources that support those groups can call into those meetings. So and it's on a weekly basis to answer your question. Mm-hmm. We have a weekly company-wide meeting. We have a biweekly sourcer team meeting. We have a biweekly recruiting meeting. It might be monthly, but I think it's biweekly. Just a recruiting team meeting. So we all stay relatively informed. And because we're worldwide, it's always moving around to accommodate people who are in APAC. So sometimes it might be, for me, East Coast, 6 o'clock in the evening, which is okay because my day is done for those kinds of meetings. And it was sort of, we sort of juggle them around.
And is there a specific ratio that Okta targets for sourcing partners to recruiters? Like, is it a one-to-one type of ratio?
That's a great question. That's a great question. To answer your question, no, there is no target. I think we're getting there. A year ago, we had a very, very super small team, just a couple of people. Now we've grown to, I believe, 13 or 14.
On the sourcing side, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
On acquisition, I think the total is over 100.
Wow. Yeah.
So we might be talking 10 to 12 to 1 right now or something. But I think it's a great question. So we don't have that number, but it would be nice if it was down to like 5 or 6 to 1. I think that would be optimal, but it's nothing near that right now.
And how is it determined what you focus on? Is it basically like the sourcing team goes to the hardest filled positions or the top priority roles? Or, I mean, how is that determination made?
It's very much like that. It's one of the things I like to say, ever since I've been in this business, who has their hair on fire, right? Whoever has their hair on fire, they're the ones that get the attention usually. And then it goes down from there. So prioritizing is definitely the manager's roles. I mean, they prioritize for us. And generally speaking, it goes from the recruiter to their manager, to my manager, back to me, or it could just go from the recruiting team to me and say, hey, we do have these on these meetings we have. Their priorities are laid out. And they can say, okay, Jim, we do need help over here or over here.
Yeah.
Basically what we try to do, and this is not really new, but we try to have our sources basically continually pipelining and churning the same kinds of people for the same kind of positions we'll always have openings for. Like when I was at Raytheon, I knew we always needed fully cleared software engineers for the Maryland customer or the Virginia customer. I knew that. I always did that. Well, here at Okta, I know we always need account executives or solutions engineers in sales, you know, the sales type solutions engineers folks in Central or in the West or the East, or we always need identity access management experts. So that's what we're trying to do and create those funnels and fulfill those pipelines for the recruiters.
Do you all do any segmentation based on either one region or two, like specialties? So for instance, like, are there a team of tech recruiters or a team of go-to-market recruiters?
Correct. That's exactly how it's broken down. Yep.
Okay.
Go-to-market recruiters. It's broken down by by basically not geographical region, but more by discipline.
But for sourcing, it sounds like it's across the board. So
correct.
Sourcing is
right
not
now
really,
it is.
It's just so you're doing everything.
right now it is because we're limited because there's so few of us.
Mm-hmm.
Such large, but yes.
Yeah, I always find that interesting to see how companies are doing that. And I think a lot of tech companies right now are more so segmenting. There are regions, but the regions, if there are regions at all, they're very large, right?
Right.
The primary way I see segmentation is more so like tech, right? Or engineering. And then there's a product team and then there's a sales or go to market team, right? So.
And I like it this way because this keeps you from bonking into each other. Right. Even though we have all recruiters do source themselves as well. So that's one reason why because of the fact we have fewer sources per recruiter, they do a lot of sourcing themselves. So, and when you go into LinkedIn or you go into our folders, you can see, okay, well, this person reached out to this person X amount of, 2 months ago, so I'm not going to reach out again or whatever. But this keeps us, I think when we're segmented like this, we're broken down like this, it keeps us from continually running into each other.
Yeah, that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Do you all have recruiters and sourcing partners that are not based in the US? Like, do you have a presence in LATAM and EMEA? And
we do.
Okay, because that's we're seeing a lot more of that now too.
Yeah, we have. I helped support some work in Germany a few months ago. We have sources in Germany and in Europe, in England, supports Europe. And then we have Australia covered. And we have a sourcer there, Martin Freeman. He's actually a very well-known sourcer in his part of the world. And I think they're opening in South America as well, because they have openings in South America. So it's very much global.
Right.
So yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, we're thinking about building out a team in LATAM. I mean, it's the appeal to that market really is that it's a very same or very similar time zone to North America.
It helps.
Yeah. So it just takes away some of the headache of dealing with some of the time zone differences. And also it increases the size of the Canada pool. Because, I mean, for instance, we have a subsidiary in Romania, a lot of great people out that way. The issue really comes down to not a lot of them want to work US hours, and that's a requirement if they're going to be helping North America. So, when we're looking for international support, specifically for North America, we actually are going to start to target LATAM. And then for our EMEA projects, we will continue to work within Eastern Europe, specifically Romania. But we're trying to really put people, empower people to work in the time zones that they're naturally in, because there's just so much more good talent available when in Romania, for instance, like when we had the requirement to support North America, it's like 90% of the workforce wasn't interested.
Right.
And you would end up targeting companies that had a similar model. And usually the companies that had a similar model weren't necessarily in a similar space, not necessarily the most relevant candidates. So, we're kind of changing that strategy a little bit, but I really do like the concept of globally distributed teams. And I think that there's some interesting strategies there when it comes to blended rates, where it's like you can have, if you need to, some senior level team members based in the US, and then have supporting counterparts that are in these international markets to bring down the overall budget. And also just having people in different time zones supporting different regions can be helpful as well. So we're seeing companies do more interesting things. And, there's tools like, Deal out there, or remote.com, that are making it easier to hire international employees. So that's really no longer becoming a barrier. So it's cool to see tech become more globalized and to see it's no longer just like Microsoft and Oracle, right? That has a subsidiary in every country. Right. It's like now we're starting to see growth stage companies. Okay, we're going to go out and hire 200 engineers in Poland, right? For whatever reason, that's a really hot market right now. We're seeing a lot of engineers being recruited in Poland right now. We're just starting to see more companies that are startups in growth stage build globally distributed teams in different time zones right now.
It's interesting. I will tell you, speaking to that, recruiting and sourcing in Japan compared to the United States, compared to Germany, compared to England, they're all very different. And people who, you won't know that until you do it. And I don't want to go into all the details, we don't have enough time, but the approach is very, very different than the United States as far as being open to receiving emails or messages. So that's something that people have to consider too when they are considering, you know, doing something outside of the US.
Oh yeah. I mean, just the level of complexity for everything related to talent acquisition and people functions as well, just gets immensely more complicated. One of the key differences, I remember when I was initially recruiting in Romania, as an American, like, we don't necessarily realize it until we start to travel a lot, but we're pretty optimistic and we're pretty outgoing and we can be kind of loud. And I think particularly in certain regions, I'll just speak to Eastern Europe. I think a lot of probably people in the Eastern European market would probably find me a bit obnoxious because my messages were always like, we're building this world-class team and we're doing all this incredible stuff. And then they're just, culturally, they're just kind of like, just chill out a little bit.
Different,
right? It's just,
I
thought I was over the top.
and they want all the information possible. They want, at least what I had learned in Germany, is they want all the information, give me everything you can tell me. And as opposed to me giving out short messages that I like to do, I had to have like a 4-page dissertation, literally. This is what we're doing. This is who we are. This is where we are. This is where we're going. This is where we were. I mean, they needed all that information before they'd even consider responding to me. So it's a very much different market.
It is. And even think about that, what you just said is drastically different than how it is in Eastern Europe, like in Romania or Poland or Ukraine. Right. I mean, it's just like, you have to be ready for those complexities because you can't just copy and paste a process playbook that works in North America and expect it to work in LATAM or expect it to work in Eastern Europe. People functions, right? Like when you're building employment packages, the stuff that we might care about could be completely different than what people care about in Eastern Europe. We had the COO of Malwarebytes on the show, and he was talking about, basically in-office plans versus remote flexibility. And, the US organization was very much so interested in having, full remote flexibility. But he mentioned that in Eastern Europe, a lot of the preference from employees was to have an office to go to at least 3 days a week. And so you start to see some nuance there. Like, you can't just send out an employee survey globally, right? And expect it. There's going to be a lot of nuance to how people want to work and the benefits that they're looking for and what they need to be successful in the role. And I find that to be very interesting. So
it is. It is, because our culture is not the same as everyone else's.
No, definitely not. So it's weird. It's like, I think ultimately, like, the globalization is good for several reasons. And I think it's good for growth stage companies because it opens up the talent pool. But there are certain things that do get a lot harder when you approach business that way, right? You have to give a lot more thought into, what's going to work within specific markets. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, look, this has been a ton of fun. I know we're kind of coming up on time here, and I know too that you have a hard stop at the top of the hour. So, I just want to say thank you for joining us today. And before we jump off, if people want to engage with you or follow you, how can they find you online?
This is crazy, but I don't have a Twitter account, but I'm on LinkedIn. I mean, people follow me on LinkedIn just look up Jim Wink at LinkedIn. That'd be great. I mean, and people can reach out to me in that respect and message me. I know I need to do that. I need to get a little bit more socially out there. But LinkedIn would be the best way.
Good to know. Well, thanks again. This was a ton of fun, and keep us posted with how you're doing. And I'm looking forward to doing this again sometime.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate the time. And certainly if you ever want to ring up a chat, I'd be happy to talk.
Okay, cool. And for everybody else tuning in, thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a 3-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.